All right, Numbers chapter 13. After the Sunday school lesson, little Joey stopped to ask a question. He said, "There's something I can't figure out." "Well, what's that, Joey?" the teacher said. "Well, according to the Bible, the children of Israel crossed the Red Sea, right?" Teacher said, "Right." "And the children of Israel beat up the Philistines, right?" And she said, "Yeah, that's right." "And the children of Israel built the temple, right?" "Again, you're right, Joey." "And the children of Israel fought the Egyptians, and the children of Israel fought the Romans, and the children of Israel was always doing something important, right?" "All that is right too," agreed the teacher. "So what's your question?" "What I want to know is this," demanded Joey. "What was all the grown-ups doing?" You know, in our study of Exodus and Numbers, or any indication of it, they were doing what too many grown-ups do. They were complaining and disobeying and fussing and fighting. I mean, we just see that routine happening over and over in their story. That's what brings us to Numbers 13. We actually spent some time in this text and this story 3 years ago. In fact, May of 2020, if you can put yourself back into what was going on in the world right then at that time. It seems like a lifetime ago, at least to some of us, but that was just at the beginning stages of COVID. And we didn't hold in-person services for, I don't remember, six weeks, something like that. And that was right at the end of April and the first part of May. And on May 20th, we had our first services back in person after that month or so that we hadn't been together. And I remember that so vividly. It was incredible to be back together. I look back on it now and it doesn't seem like 5 or 6 weeks. It's not that long a period of time, but I'm telling you, in the middle of that and with everything that was going on in our world, I think we all just felt how desperately we needed to be together. And on May 20th, we were back here in this place in two different services. So we're all in the same room, but two different services like we have this morning. And it was just a sweet time of being together again, a reminder for us. And we looked at the first part of this chapter in Numbers chapter 13. I'm not going back to that first section, although we'll have to pick up a little bit of it in order that we can get the context. But we're going to mainly spend our time in the late part of the chapter, and then we're going to work through chapter 14. In fact, we're going to be in these two chapters for the next 2 weeks at least, maybe even a third after that. So let me give you a little bit of background to set the stage. Some of you that have not been with us through the whole series, if you're tagging in, you know, right here this morning or just the last couple of weeks. Actually, it's probably a good place to tell you that you can go back and listen to the full series on our website. If you get on the church website, Harvest Baptist Church, and if you click right on the homepage, there's a little part of it that says recent messages or sermon archives. And if you click the listen now under the sermon archives, it'll bring you to a page that says recent series, and that's this page. And if you can notice up on the top left, the God You Can Trust, that's the series that we've been in now for, I think this is the 9th week, but there's also, you know, I guess a few others on this page, and there's several other pages of series of messages that you can go back to. So if you missed the first part of this series, I'd love for you to get back on the website and pick up kind of the story as we've been moving through this. So Israel's at a crucial point in its national life. They had been freed from slavery in Egypt. We've been talking about that for a number of weeks. And now they had spent the last 2 years away from slavery, but wandering in the desert. The initial excitement about getting out of Egypt had worn off. Remember a couple weeks ago, last week, when we talked about Numbers 11 and the complaining and the fussing that really had been happening all along. I mean, the excitement of out of slavery had worn off. The land of Canaan, the promised land, was right in front of them. This was the land that God had promised to them. For generations, they had talked about it. In these 300 years of slavery, their grandparents and great-great-great-great-great-grandparents had told the stories again of how incredible the promised land was. The land of Canaan that they'd come from. And so their families had dreamed about the time that they would be released from Egypt and be able to go back to the land. And now we get to Numbers 13. And God says, go. Now's the time. Take the land. You'd think that they wouldn't even have to think about it. But instead, they hesitate. And the nation of Israel is at a crossroad. Would they trust God to protect them and to provide for them? Or would their human fear and their hesitation hold them back from pursuing God's best and his blessings on their life? I think the concept of crossroads is a powerful one. I talk about it a lot. The idea that we come to various places in our life where we're forced to make a decision about what direction we're going to take. And that decision impacts so many things. The course of our life goes perhaps in completely different directions depending on the crossroads that we're at. I mean, I think we might have a slide about this. Yeah, I can look back on my life and identify lots of little decisions, each one impacting my life in a certain way. But there are a few of my decisions that I look back on and they like set my life in a completely different direction than it would have been. And sometimes you know it. It's like, hey, this is going to be a huge thing. I'm looking forward. This decision I know is going to significantly impact my future. But you know, for me, a lot of time you don't really know it until later, and you look back on it. And so I can identify a couple of crossroads in my life, points at which the decision that I made set me on a path that was, you know, very different from the path that I would have taken if I'd have taken a different, you know, journey. You probably can too. You can probably look back on some decisions that you made, and my guess is there'll be a few of them that will stand out like, wow, that really set my life on a course different from anything else I could have done. We call it a crossroad. And we come to these not only just in the normal decisions of life, but there's some very significant spiritual crossroads in our lives. In this context, in this chapter, we're introduced to 12 men. Their names and their families are recorded for us in verses 4 through 16. And God tells Moses this in verse 2. He says, send thou men that they may search the land of Canaan, which I gave unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers shall you send a man, every one a ruler among them. And I want you to know that these are 12 bad dudes. I mean, I don't mean that like in a negative way. These are strong, courageous men. They had, first of all, they were the offspring of generations of tough, hard, physical labor. Building pyramids in difficult conditions. And then they were the ones that were chosen to go as these covert spies, traveling fast and light and deep into enemy territory. I mean, they looked out over the 2 million Israelite strong men that and women, in fact, that had been hardened by generations of difficult, hard physical labor. These are strong, tough guys. And out of that whole 2 million strong, if each of the families, they said, we want to take, you know, your one, kind of your warrior, the guy that you can trust, you know, specifically for, you know, one of the most important tasks that we have. We're not talking about, you know, going into a land that's kind of a peace-loving tourist territory. This is enemy territory. We'll read about in a minute, but this is a land of fierce, warring tribal warlords in a very harsh climate. I want you to picture kind of a band of Navy SEALs or Green Berets or Special Ops Forces. I mean, these guys were ready to go, and the mission that they had in front of them, you know, was to sneak into the land of Canaan, travel all throughout this very difficult terrain. I mean, you can just picture the Middle East right now. Travel throughout that country in the middle of these warring tribal warlords, and they're supposed to pick up the intel, the info that was needed for the Israelite leaders to know how they're going to overcome the land. Look at verse 17. And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan. And he said unto them, get you up this way southward and go up into the mountain and see the land, what it is, and the people that dwell therein, whether they be strong or weak, few or many, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that dwell in, whether it be tents or in strongholds. And what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be wood therein or not, and be ye of good courage, and bring of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. So that's what they did. I mean, you talk about a mission. These were brave, courageous, capable men. Verse 25, and they returned from searching of the land after 40 days. This was a 40-day mission in enemy territory the whole time. As far as I can tell, they had no backup combat rescue plan if they got themselves in trouble. They returned from searching the land after 40 days, and they went and they came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel under the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. I mean, these men knew what they're getting into, right? I mean, word spread about these fierce tribes and the warlords in that region. We're going to read it in just a minute. I mean, these are some tough areas. And that's why in the middle of verse 20, Moses tells them that you're going to have to be of good courage. Or you're going to have to put your big boy pants on for this one. You're going to have to put your courage vest on, because this is going to be a tough mission. So that's what they do. They went in the southern part all the way up through the land and then circled back down again. And verse 25, which we just read, they got back after the 40 days. And all the people wanted to hear, and they kind of crowded around. The first part of verse 26 tells us that. And they said, man, you wouldn't believe what we saw. Everything that you'd ever want was flowing in this land. It was amazing. In fact, they brought back a cluster of grapes that they had gathered that was so big that they had to put it on a pole and carry it by two men. I mean, think of what that sight must have been. They'd had 2 years wandering in the desert, eating manna and then quail, and that's it. And now these guys walk in and they're carrying such a big bunch of grapes that they had to put it on a pole to carry it back to them. They plop it down on the table. They're like, man, this land is amazing. You can almost feel the swelling excitement of the people. And they were ready to go. They'd been living as gypsies. They'd been surviving for the last 2 years in this very difficult land. And they'd been eating this manna. And look down at verse 27. And they told him, and they said, we came unto the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it flows with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. And then, like a bombshell, One of the most deflating words ever spoken at the beginning of verse 28. And then this big word, they said, nevertheless. It's all great, but. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. If you remember your Bible geography, I mean, this land is not that large. And in the middle of this land are these, you know, I've been calling these warlords, these raging tribal wars that have taken place in these very tough people. And he names them. They're all there. And now they're at a crossroad, right? Are they going to go forward into the future that God has planned out for them? In fact, he has promised to them. Or are they going to hold back? And you can see all of that. I mean, these big obstacles, these giants. And the truth is, the fear starts to creep in. Anybody here ever stood at this crossroad like that? Anybody feel like you're there right now? You can see all of the goodness that God promises, but at the same time, the obstacles and the fear. So what happens next? Well, 10 of these courageous men say, man, the obstacles are too great. We won't make it. We can't do it. And 2 said, we can do it. God has told us to go. He's promised us. Let's not stop now. Keep reading verse 30 says, and Caleb stilled the people before Moses, and he said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him said, we be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched under the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. And all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants. And we were in our own sight. Here's the title phrase. We were as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. For the next couple of weeks, I want to look at the contrast between the people that will choose to move forward in faith and obedience at the leading of God and those who will shrink back in fear at the obstacles in their path. And we're going to see it in the difference between Caleb and the rest of the crowd. Caleb versus the crowd. It is the ultimate contrast. Those who will shrink back in fear at the sight of obstacles when we're starting to try to move forward in the path that God has in front of us, and those who will shrink back, and those who will stride forward in faith, believing that what God promised, he can fulfill. And can I just give you a heads up? The end of the story, in this instance, fear is going to win out. And the result is going to be 40 more years of wandering in the desert. And that whole generation of those who shrunk back in fear are going to have to pass from the scene before their children could claim the promise. So we're only going to look at the first 2 this morning, but before we're done, we're going to talk about 7 contrasts between those who would venture to be Calebs in their families and in their churches, and those who are content to muddle along with the crowd. I think these are incredibly important. I think they're important for you and your family. They're important for churches. They're important now, and they're going to be important in the future. What is the difference between people who will see the promises of God and step into them and those who will retreat when the obstacles come about because of the comfort that they see behind them? Number one is this. Caleb's see God's promises and respond confidently. The crowd sees human obstacles and responds fearfully. I think there's four key words, if you can mentally mark them down or even circle them if you're taking some notes. We've got promises and obstacles. Caleb see God's promises, and the crowd sees the human obstacles. That's the big contrast. And then the other two key words is the response. Some respond confidently, or you could kind of put in faith, and some respond fearfully. So we've got this promises and obstacles responses is confident and faithfully and fearfully. And this really is an incredibly important key contrast in those who will be followers of Jesus. At the beginning of chapter 13, God says, he tells them, he commands them, go take the land. I have given it to you. Verse 2 says, this is the land. This land is the children of Israel. So this is your land. I've given it to you. This isn't a question. It's not like you might be able to get it. He says, go take it. I've given it to you. And then we got down to verse 28, and it said this nevertheless, right? The spies that went to check it out, they said, it's all great, but... Look down at verse 32. We read this already, but the spies said, the 10 said, you know, this land eats up the inhabitants. And all of the people that we saw are big and tough. Not just some of them, all of them. And then it talks about these giants that are in the land. I mean, we felt like grasshoppers. The idea, like, you know, when they walked around, like their big giant foot was going to squish us. And then verse 31, I mean, their conclusion was, we are not able. We're not able to go up against these. Yeah, this is a great land. The fruit that we brought back is incredible. But the obstacles are too great. And I don't know how you read this or if you kind of put yourself into the story. All of our personalities are a little bit different. I'm not sure what you feel when you read those obstacles, but I'll tell you how I feel. I mean, I every time I read through this story and I get to this spot where the 10 spies are saying, yeah, it's awesome. I mean, these aren't like fearful people. They should be people that are tough and strong. And I'm like, man, listen. I feel like I kind of want to shout back, hey, wait a minute. Who asked you whether you should go in? That's not really the question. That wasn't your assignment, man. God has already promised that it is our land. He's told us to go forward. The assignment was to go find out the path and the strategy to do it. What are we doing talking about holding back? But isn't that exactly how it happens in life? We start forward. Some of you are new in your spiritual walk. You're new in your Christian walk. Or maybe you've been a Christian for a while, but you're right now trying to start taking some steps again for growth and faithfulness to God. And, you know, we start forward and we're trusting God and we're claiming his promises. But sometime in the process, we face obstacles. Whatever they are that you're facing right now. And we lose our vision, and we start, here's a big word, we start to get sidetracked in our perspective. We took a few steps forward, a few steps by faith, but then, you know, a little bit of obstacles come in. It might be family, it might be, you know, busy, you know, whatever it is, and then we lose perspective. We start to forget where we're walking. We get sidetracked. We take our eyes off God and we take our eyes off of his promises. And we start focusing on the troubles and the difficulties that we're facing, and we start numbering the people, right? We start counting. We start measuring their height. I mean, these giants are huge. And we start comparing the odds. I mean, really, am I going to make this? And the result is always predictable. We get intimidated. Have you felt that? And we wind up defeated. And we end up saying things like these guys did at the end of verse 31. He says, you know, we are not able to go up against the people. I can't do it. They're stronger than me. The giants are too big. The obstacles are too great. I was hoping that the path would be a little bit easier. I didn't realize that there was going to be some trials along the way. I can't keep doing it. I can't do it. Period. End of the story. In their mind, that was it. We can't go forward. The task is too big. And so these 10 leaders take their eyes off God. And they're overcome by the giants. And here's an interesting thing. I want you to know what happens to the people. When the leaders take their eyes off God and start putting it on the giants, here's what happens to the people. Keep reading in chapter 14. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried. And the people wept that night. Why do you think they wept? Why did they cry? What they felt was the erasing of the promise. They thought they were going to get out of the mess that they were in. We've seen them cry quite a bit throughout this because they're, constantly feeling sorry for themselves. So maybe that was part of it too. But here's what happens. Verse 2, and all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness. Man, this is a broken record, isn't it? And wherefore hath the Lord brought us unto this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt? I mean, the same complaining over and over, the same exact words. And I know that there's some period of time. We've read it in a period of 9 weeks. It feels like every week we come back and they say the exact thing. And this was over a period of time. But this is how it happens for us in our lives. This murmuring, complaining spirit, this questioning God, this fearful spirit comes up and we just keep repeating the same ridiculous and harmful statements. And Moses is tired of it. Verse 4, and they said one to another, let us make a captain, let us return into Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation and the children of Israel. Retreat. The odds are too great. We got to go back. We got to stand down. We can't keep pressing this faith thing forward anymore. It's humanly, it's overwhelming what's in front of us. And listen, none of us are immune to this line of thinking. When difficult days come, it is extremely easy for our focus to get out of whack. And instead of seeing and trusting God, we let our troubles and fear really become our focus. And in spite of the fact that God had clearly led them and he had promised and he'd shown his power to them and he does this to us, we want to retreat. We feel like I got to stand down. I got to back up. I got to find my comfort zone again. In Israel's case, there's two men who did not lose their vision about what God had promised them. One is the man by the name of Caleb. We just talked about him. The other is a guy named Joshua. We're going to get him right here. And you want to know what these men did? Look at verse 5 and verse 6. All the assembly of the the end of verse 5, all the assembly of the congregation, the children of Israel, they bowed down before them, and Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, they rent their clothes. So when they saw Moses and Aaron on their faces, they ripped off their clothes. It was a sign of sincerity. I'm not proposing to you that that's going to be our service tonight, right? This is not, you know, practical for us here. But it was this, they ripped off their clothes and they said, hey, wait a minute. There's another side to all of this. Our focus has gotten shifted. You know, these men have come along and they're leaders of our, you know, of our band, but they've taken our eyes off of God and they've put it on the calculations about whether we can humanly get this done. And Joshua and Caleb say, no, the focus can't be on us. We got to put it on God. Look at verse 8. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into the land and he will give it to us. Man, I just love this. These Calebs, these Joshua, that even in the middle of everybody else saying we can't do this and this is not possible, they step up and say, listen, if the Lord is leading us, of course we could do it. This land is great. The blessing is just in front of us. The promises are sure. Let's not stand here being afraid. I mean, we're wasting time that we could be enjoying God's blessings. It's time for us to be courageous. And what was the counsel of these two courageous men of God? Well, you can read it, verses 7 through 9. They go, their counsel is, let's go. Let's press on. Let's roll. Back at the end of chapter 13, verse 30, they say, let's go now. Let's go at once. Every day that we waste here in this desert, we're missing out on the blessings of the promises of God in the land that he's given us. Every single day we're missing it. God has led. God has promised. And now is not the time to back down and retreat. Now is not the time to bunker down and get comfortable. I wonder how many times in our lives we have missed God's blessing because we take a look around at our human obstacles and we're afraid and we fail to step out in faith. We fail to believe in God's great ability. Man, you guys, I've watched churches do this. I've watched families do this for 30 years. God brings them to a place where they have to take a faith step. Sometimes it's in finances, sometimes it's in vision, but it's a faith step. That's the next thing that has to happen. And inevitably, in fact, you can just mark this down, God's blessings are connected with faith steps. I just hardly ever see it without that. And the reason that God's blessings are connected with faith steps is because if God's blessings only come as a result of the things that we can humanly figure out, then we have a tendency to say, look what we've done. But when we come to the edge and God is still leading us forward, but he's saying the next step is going to be something that you can't figure out humanly. You can't calculate. You're going to have to take a step of faith that says, I'm leading, that God is leading, and we believe in it, and we're going to move forward. Almost always, God's blessings involve that step at some place. That's why Hebrews says that without faith, it is impossible to please God. And so that faith step is just so critical because that's how we know that it was God who did it and not our human effort. And when we fail to take that step of faith, then we sentence ourselves to milling around with the crowd in the desert. And I don't know. It just feels like there's a whole bunch of Christianity that's all that they're doing. just feels like there's a whole bunch of churches and a whole bunch of Christian families that's just all they're doing. They just seem to be milling around with the rest of the crowd in the desert. And it's not like they're miserable. I don't mean it like that. It's just that we've missed out on the full extent of God's blessings. If I can add a couple conditional clauses, very clearly in this text, God had led them. This is always important. I can't take time on it. So you can't go jumping out, running forward when God has not led. God had clearly led them. That's why they could take this faith step. And also, just to note, it was okay for them to see what they're getting into and to make plans. God told them to send the 12 spies up and figure it out. It's okay to check it out and think carefully and to analyze whether we should do this or not. It's okay to make that human assessment. But at some point, you got to find out, is God leading? And if God's leading, then we have to go. I have to take that faith step. So, if you can catch this, a man with vision and faith, or a woman with vision, or a group of people with vision, they see what God can do, and they're not discouraged by their fear of failure. Let me just mention this second one. Caleb's focus on potential opportunities, the crowd focuses on exaggerated obstacles. Some of their concerns were legitimate. I'm talking about this exaggerated obstacles part. Some of their concerns were legitimate. I mean, there were walls. There were strong armies. There was big guys. In fact, there's an interesting study on the giants, the sons of Anak, in verse 33. Let me take just a minute to tell you this. The Hebrew word is Nephilim. The Hebrew word for giant is Nephilim. In fact, the ESV, you might be reading that, and some other translations, they just transliterate the word Nephilim into the English text. So whereas I read it and there were giants in the land, you might read a translation that says there were Nephilim in the land. In fact, real quick, go back with me to Genesis chapter 6. I want you to see this. This is interesting. Some of you guys might already know this or track with it, but I'm sure it'll be new to some of you. Genesis chapter 6, this is talking about those giants that are referred to there in Numbers that were in the land. Genesis chapter 6 and verse 4, look at this. There were giants in the earth in those days. And also after that, when, this is interesting, the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them. The same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. So Genesis 6:4 talks about these giants as the offspring of the sons of God and the daughters of men. There are some, you might even see this, you have a study Bible, you might see a note about this. There are some that believe that the sons of God refers to angels. So angels with relationships with the daughters of men, the resulting in these children that were giants. There's some reasons why some think that. I don't think that that's the case. I think it's talking about Israelite men marrying Gentile women. So I think that's what it's talking about. But the result is that there's very large offspring from these unions. There were giants. The people during this time, these Nephilim had taken on almost like a superhuman kind of mythic proportion. So when the spies came back and they mentioned these Nephilim, it's almost like a scare tactic. There was no doubt there was large, strong men in this area. I mean, we know about Goliath. He's going to come up in the story a little bit later. He's 10 feet tall. This is a big dude. So there's giants, but this Nephilim references is kind of an exaggeration of reality. It's sort of like the children of Israel had not seen them. And if you hadn't seen them, there's these mythic proportions as sort of these extraterrestrial like men that, you know, were roaming this region, the Nephilim that were in this area. And so they came back and this was very frightening for the children of Israel. In fact, the next phrase continues kind of the exaggeration. They said, we were as grasshoppers. That's sort of the title. They weren't really grasshoppers. That would be a pretty wide proportion of how big these guys must be. But they felt like that. We understand it. We know what they meant. I mean, we faced obstacles in our path that have seemed so huge, right, that we feel like grasshoppers. fact, you might have a problem in front of you right now that it's so huge to you, you have no idea how you're going to overcome it. And you know what we're talking about when he says, it feels like I'm a grasshopper in response or in proportion to this problem in front of me. You know, some of us here have battled some difficult things in life. There's some that have battled some life-dominating habits that have just felt like a giant in your life, like your whole journey. Some have kicked them, but some are in the battle, you know, right now. Battle for your thought life, or maybe a battle with pornography, or battle with alcohol, or life destroying drugs. I mean giants that have just felt like they've overwhelmed you. Some of us have come from homes and families that are just a huge mess. And some of the ways that chaos and that trauma has shaped you and it's wired you. And so now the ways that you think and the ways that you respond to life, sometimes it feels like no matter how hard you try, you have to battle every day to try to think straight and to think right. And it's like this giant in your life. We've been overwhelmed. And we've also faced some tasks that seem overwhelming. I mean, those of you that are parents right now and kind of those tough days of parenting, some of you moms, I mean, there's some seasons of life as a mom that it's just like overwhelming. Or there's a project on your plate, or there's a problem in your world, and, you know, just this growing sense that in my life I've got these giants, and it's almost like if I can just find a place of comfort and if I can just stand down instead of continuing to step forward and overcoming what God's put in our lives. And I think about it in terms of, you know, kind of the ministry giants in front of it. Man, you guys, I just have this growing burden, and it is deep and it is real about this question about how are we going to reach our island for Jesus? I mean, how are we going to reach our neighborhoods and our villages? How do we care well for these people that there's so much brokenness and so much need and burden and hurts and people all around us? My heart is burdened. I've been praying that how are we going to see God bring revival of God's Spirit to our island and to our families so that, you know, 20 years from now, we'd be able to look out over our communities and we would be able to know this place is different because of the work that God did through his people on this island that felt like, you know, some years back, it felt like a giant. How could it, you know, a church like us or maybe some other Christian, how are we going to impact, you know, a culture that seems like it's going the wrong direction? How is that going to turn around? It seems like such a big obstacle. There's obstacles, there's giants, and it would be super easy to shrink back into the comfort, right? I mean, we can just keep coming to church and we can enjoy our fellowship, but, you know, let's not push the needle too much. Don't stretch too much out of my comfort zone. You know, don't ask too much. People will start thinking you're a little bit radical. I mean, that's what happened to the Jesus followers in the New Testament. They're like, man, those guys are a little bit crazy. Your family and your friends are going to start saying stuff. There's obstacles. And the question is whether we're going to be dominated by these obstacles, some of them legitimate, some of them exaggerated, or whether we will choose to step out on faith and pursue the opportunities in front of us. So Caleb's focus on potential opportunities, the crowd focuses on exaggerated obstacles. I'm going to ask Andrew to come next week. We're going to talk about five more, all right? In fact, I'm not even going to give you a heads up on them. You're going to have to come next week to see them. But these are really important, right? There's this contrast in your life, in your spiritual life. Are you going to be a Caleb? Or are you going to just be part of the crowd that wanders around in the desert all your life? There are some very distinct biblical differences between them, and I want to make sure that we see them and we apply them. So, what are the giants in your life? What are the issues that overwhelm you and make you feel like a grasshopper when you face them. Listen, the only way that you will face these giants courageously is you got to take your eyes off the difficulties. This morning, stop looking at all the obstacles and place them steadfastly on your great God, the one who's promised, who's set a path in front of you, a path of his blessing. We put our eyes on him and off the problems, off the obstacles. And God brings us then in faith to his blessing. If you bow your heads with me, with your heads bowed and your eyes closed, just our pastors are up and kind of looking around. But if everybody else, if you just be in a place where you can look at your heart and talk with God. I wonder if there'd be some that would say, you know, there are some giants in my life right now that have overwhelmed my vision. And maybe I've walked in here feeling like I can't keep moving forward. And this morning I know that I got to take my vision off those things. I got to put it back on God. Pastor, would you pray for me? I wonder if there'd be somebody be willing to lift your hands. There's some giants in my life that have overwhelmed my vision. Would you pray for me? Would you just lift up your hand and put it down? Amen. Thank you. Lots of hands. Others, I just need some prayer, these giants in my life. Our Father, I pray that you continue to equip in this church a team, a body, a family full of Calebs. And we're asking for a generation of young people, college students, young families, a generation of this church that would not cower in fear at the obstacles in our path, but we would look in faith, that we would see you and the opportunities in front of us. I pray that you'd shape us, give us the faith and the knowledge to know how to pursue you at the crossroads of our lives and not to take the path to comfort. Would you continue to work that in our lives? I thank you for those who have courageously lifted their hand this morning. I pray for them. I don't know what the giants are. I don't know what's overwhelming them at this stage, but you know, and you care. And I pray that you'd help each one, maybe even some that didn't raise their hand. I pray that you'd help them to live by faith, to not back down, to continue to trust you even through the challenges that you have in their path. I pray that they would know that your blessings are in front of them, and that if they'll by faith follow what you call them, that you'll bring them to the promised land. So I pray for this, ask you to help us to be followers, totally surrendered disciples of you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.